OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/wallstreet.
Cryptocurrency exchange Coinbase made its trading debut today, and crypto prices soared.
This is just another validation of cryptocurrencies as an asset class, as something that investors can feel comfortable in, and that people can feel comfortable using them. And that doesn't mean that Bitcoin is without risks, that cryptocurrencies are without risks.
We'll have more on Coinbase's IPO and its impact on the market. Plus, the latest bank earnings show a continuing divide between Main Street and Wall Street. And there's an underground trade of ketchup packets. It's Wednesday, April 14th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. As predicted, it was a big day for bank earnings. Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan posted record profits for the first quarter, benefiting from a turbocharged market and the economic recovery. Wells Fargo also posted its best ever quarterly profit in corporate and investment banking. But the latest results also point to a growing gap between Wall Street and Main Street. Consumer banking revenue was down 6% at JP Morgan and flat at Wells Fargo. Both banks also released billions of dollars they had set aside last year for potentially bad loans. Kim Potter, the former police officer from Minnesota who killed 20-year-old Dante Wright during a traffic stop in a Minneapolis suburb, has been taken into custody and charged with second-degree manslaughter. Under state law, the charge carries a maximum sentence of 10 years in prison. The charges come after two nights of unrest. Our reporter Aaron Aylworth has more from Minneapolis.
The community has been calling for charges since this happened, essentially. On Monday, at the press conference where the mayor released the body cam footage, they were already talking about wanting to see charges against this officer. And last night, I was out at a rally that was organized in front of the police department, and the main speaker there was basically saying, listen, we need to see this woman put in handcuffs and put in jail. And that's when justice and healing will start.
Potter's lawyer, Earl Gray, didn't immediately respond to requests for comment. Police have said that Potter mistakenly shot Wright with her gun instead of her taser. This comes amid high tensions over the trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, who is accused of murdering George Floyd. The defense could rest its case as early as tomorrow. President Biden has formally announced his plan to withdraw U.S. forces from Afghanistan by September 11th. Speaking from the Treaty Room in the White House today, where he said former President George W. Bush announced strikes against Afghanistan in 2001, Biden said it's time for American troops to come home.
I'm now the fourth United States president to preside over American troop presence in Afghanistan. Two Republicans, two Democrats. I will not pass this responsibility onto a fifth.
There are about 3,500 soldiers still in Afghanistan. Biden says their withdrawal will begin on May 1st. That was the date for complete withdrawal the Trump administration had agreed to in a deal with the Taliban. The Senate has confirmed Gary Gensler, a veteran regulator and bank executive, as chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission. Gensler is expected to take a tougher approach to policing Wall Street. Among the issues he's likely to tackle, the concerns raised by the trading frenzy in GameStop and other stocks, as well as a boom in SPACs or blank check companies. Only three Republicans voted to approve his nomination. And disgraced investor Bernie Madoff has died at the age of 82. Madoff was the architect of a multi-billion dollar Ponzi scheme. He had been serving a 150-year prison sentence after pleading guilty in 2009 to one of the largest frauds in U.S. history. Our investment editor, Jeffrey Rogo, says the ripple effects are still being felt.
The Madoff hangover continues to this day. You know, there's a trustee who continues to try to find ill-gotten gains and deliver those to the victims of the fraud. And then there's the broader relationship between investors, you know, hedge funds and asset managers, and the people who give them money. There was a trust that broke down. The question is, Have we fixed regulation enough to ensure that there is never a Madoff again? And I think if you ask investors, they would say no. They would say a lot of changes have happened. There was a lot of momentum in the early days, but the level of trust in the investing world has forever changed.
Coming up after the break, what Coinbase's public debut means for cryptocurrency.
NetSuite by Oracle brings accounting, finance, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce costs everywhere. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/wallstreet.
Coinbase, the largest Bitcoin exchange in the U.S., made its trading debut today, bringing in an $85 billion valuation. Some analysts had projected that number to be as high as $100 billion based on private market trading. It did surpass that level during trading today before ultimately pulling back, ending the session at just over $328 a share. But it's still a big moment for the company and for cryptocurrency. Joining me now is Wall Street Journal cryptocurrency reporter Paul Vigna and the author of two books on the subject. Hi, Paul. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Amory.
So, Paul, Coinbase is the first major cryptocurrency-focused company to go public in the U.S. How significant is this debut, and what does it mean for cryptocurrency?
It's significant. It's significant for the company, of course, but it's significant for cryptocurrencies as an industry. You have had this buildup over the last 9-10 years of this asset and this industry maturing. And you've had a lot of startups, a lot of ups and downs, a lot of companies have come and gone. And you've had a lot of money, a lot of venture capital has been thrown at this industry. A lot of investor money has been thrown at this industry. And Coinbase has grown steadily through the years as the industry has matured, as it has become more a part of the broader capital markets, as you have had more sort of a back and forth between Wall Street and crypto. A lot of employees leave Wall Street for crypto now. Crypto goes to Wall Street. A lot of investors now buy Bitcoin, buy cryptocurrencies. So you've had a lot of sort of cross-fertilization. And now you have one of the cryptocurrency companies trading as a publicly traded stock in the United States. And not just a small one, like this is going to be a big one.
So tell us a little bit more about Coinbase's co-founders and their goals in taking the company public now and making cryptocurrency more accessible and mainstream.
Coinbase was founded in 2012. It was a brainchild of a guy called Brian Armstrong, and his co-founder is Fred Ersham. And what was interesting about it was that these were two guys that got crypto from the beginning. They understood the potential of it. But what was even more interesting was that their insight, their great insight in making Coinbase was that Bitcoin was unusable for most people. It was too hard technically to access. And that you couldn't just be one of these crypto anarchists saying we're going to blow up the banks. You couldn't say we're going to go around the law. We're going to go around regulators. They understood that if this was going to become something that was going to be a mainstream thing for people, if this is going to become digital money, the money of the internet, it had to be accessible to everybody. And that meant that you had to have a very sort of simple user interface, a very sort of simple portal so that people who were not technically savvy could access it. And that you weren't going to go around the banks, you weren't going to go around the regulators, that you needed them. They understood that from the start, and that was how they built the company. And that at the time, especially at the time, early 2012, that was pretty much standing in opposition to everybody else in the crypto markets.
Paul, what does all this mean for the legitimacy of cryptocurrency?
It's another sort of brick in the wall, I guess, one way to put it. Yeah, this is just another validation of cryptocurrencies as an asset class, as something that investors can feel comfortable in, and that people can feel comfortable using them. And that doesn't mean that Bitcoin is without risks and that cryptocurrencies are without risks. I have to point that out. This is still a very volatile market. You know, Bitcoin trading, what's really interesting about it, it's 24/7. There are no circuit breakers. There's no closing bell. There's no weekends off. This thing could go down to zero tomorrow and there is nothing that would stop it. So it is still a very young asset class. It is very speculative. It is very volatile. But it is not quite the Wild West show it used to be. there is, you know, a really the biggest change has been sort of this idea of regulatory risk that governments would come in and ban these things. They're not going to do that now. Most of the world governments now are, if they're not neutral, they're actually supportive of it. And a lot of countries have just have put in rules around them. So it's sort of been codified. It's become accessible. It's become acceptable. Again, doesn't mean it's not without risk, but the perception of it has changed among professional investors, among lawmakers, among regulators, and that has sort of made it more acceptable.
And of course, even ahead of this debut, we were seeing a rally in cryptocurrency, and that's on top of a very successful year for Bitcoin too. Talk a little bit more about how this is all influencing investment in cryptocurrency, especially as it's becoming sort of more accessible, as you're saying.
Well, these things are feeding on each other right now. And I mean, one of the things you really have to understand about Bitcoin right now is that it is really driven almost completely by momentum and sentiment. And the Coinbase listing gets people excited, right? So the price kind of goes up of Bitcoin. The price goes up of Bitcoin and people get excited. And now they're looking for different ways to get in there. And they say, oh, well, Coinbase is going public. Maybe I could buy that. So maybe they're buying that. And the two things just feed off each other. And right now, you look at the cryptocurrency markets and it's just a feeding frenzy. Bitcoin's price has doubled in less than 4 months. That's pretty volatile. And it had a spectacular 2020. So it went up to around, roughly speaking, 30,000 by the end of 2020. And now it's trading above 60,000. I mean, look, if you're an investor, at some point, the risks just fall away in front of that kind of price movement. And that's why you are seeing this absolute feeding frenzy. That's why Coinbase's valuation is probably going to be something that a lot of people are going to look at and say, oh my God, that's nuts. That said, what is this long term? It's impossible to say what it is going to be long term.
That's Wall Street Journal cryptocurrency reporter Paul Vigna. Paul, thanks so much for joining me today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And finally, last week, we talked about how pandemic supply chain constraints were putting a squeeze on ketchup and how restaurants were rationing out their single serve packets. Well, that story by our reporters Heather Haddon and Annie Gasparo really created a lot of buzz. People started digging into their refrigerators, glove compartments, and office break rooms looking for ketchup packets. And Heather says some even started hawking them on eBay and Facebook Marketplace.
So the market is really all over the place. There's kind of no rhyme or reason to it. And I think that really ties into people have very different motives doing this, whether they see a joke in it or if they're actually looking to make money. So, you know, just briefly analyzing the packets on there, you know, it's everywhere from like 25 cents for a packet, which has about a third of an ounce of ketchup, to, you know, a couple bucks for some of these. And people are selling them individually. They're selling them in big lots, say like 50 packages of ketchup. So it's really all over the place. And again, gets into motive if people are really trying to make a buck off of this or just have some fun.
And that's what's news for this Wednesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.